Hello and welcome to the WS podcast. My name is Wojciech Salski. I'll be your host for today. And before we begin, may I just remind you, if you think this podcast in any way, shape or form is worth your while, then please make sure to follow, subscribe and maybe share it with a friend or a family member. You know, it definitely helps the podcast to grow. It lets me know as well which episodes are working better, which are not. Also, it just it's a lovely thing to see a friendly face, to hear a friendly gesture of a comment, for example, and yeah, you know, here I am rambling away, and I hope for the better. You know, I enjoy doing it, and so I will be doing it regardless. But of course, you know, whenever I get an email or a commentary even from someone that I didn't even realize I was so close to, in a sense that they've been listening religiously and that they love it and that it's helping them in some way, it just warms my heart. It makes it all the better. So yeah, also just for those of you who might have joined recently, please let me know what you think about the setup, about the light, about the sound, about the sounds, because I'm recording in a much bigger space and I'm no sound technician. So yeah, it's still fairly bootstrapped. It's still same old, same old. It's quite cold as well, so I'm wearing a hoodie. Not sponsoring any, you know, any brands here, so I won't be standing up, but it's my favorite hoodie from a place I used to work in. And yeah, let's maybe take it away. Thank you so much for being. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoy. So yet again, this is an episode chosen by my wife. It seems like it's going to be a theme that I will be asking her which episode is next, you know, in this season. Let's see if it works the same for other seasons. So we've recently started the season of finance, geopolitics, the world, trade, economics, topics related to such ideas. And last week we've explored the book by Jeff Booth called Price of Tomorrow. And if you'd like to explore in particular some, I will be sort of referring to some of the ideas from other topics, other episodes we've discussed. And if you feel like one or the other feels like a theme you'd like to explore more, I'll put the link below to all of those, and hopefully you can then check it out. The Price of Tomorrow was a really great setup to what we're going to discuss today, because of the idea of inflation, right? So just a quick reminder, inflation is essentially an increase in supply of something. And for example, inflation of your money makes your money worth less, right? Because it's divided, the value gets diminished by being divided into more pieces of money, right? For example. And we will definitely touch on inflation in some way today. And yeah, here we are. We've decided, my wife decided that today's episode is going to be about the New Confessions of Economic Hitman. It's interesting that the book is called The New Confession of Economic Hitman, while it's basically a new version of the same book by the name Confessions of Economic Hitman. And yeah, you guessed it. It's not going to be a pleasant ride. It's not going to be a pleasant topic. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets shadow banned or taken down from some platforms that I'll be sharing it on. Let's see. It's an experiment. I won't be saying here, I don't think, anything that is like a secret. You might just not know about it because you might have never thought about it. And I think for good reason, we sometimes, unfortunately, from my perspective, unfortunately, although it is, as I said, for good reason, we decide not to think deeper about those things because it's just a bit troubling. And the author even in the book mentions this as us being accomplices to it by turning away our gaze, right? By not noticing. So I've prepared some notes this time on my phone. I'm trying to be a bit more digital these days because I noticed that when I make notes in my little cute notebook, I run out of space so quickly that it just becomes a bit messy. And then I, you know, don't provide you with the quality that I'd like to provide you with. So I've prepared some notes, then I distilled them down, and now I have a distilled version of it. So let me just get straight to the first idea, right? The author is an ex-economic hitman, as he calls themselves. The core idea throughout the book is that modern empires are not sort of created by tanks and flags and war in the sense that we know from the 20th century, for example. Rather, they are created through a mixture of debt, fear, and so-called help, right? And basically, the economic hitmen, so the EHMs, the economic hitmen, are the architects of this system, which basically is designed to look like a benevolent force, a help of a sort, a friendly gesture, at the same time actually functioning as an economic colonization, okay? So to first and foremost understand this, you got to look through the lens of that central banking that we've explored last week, and also in the Creature from Jekyll Island episode, which you can find the link below too. So debt is created by banks and by central banks and by anyone who is in charge of monetary supply of any given currency, unless it's some commodity such as gold and you know, or it's a finite like Bitcoin. Let's stick to currencies though. So for example, if you're using a peso, if you're using a dollar, if you're using a pound, if you're using a zloty, whatever you're using, that currency is being created by someone. But fiat means by decree. And of course that, you know through history that there has been many forms of currency by decree. There has been the money created by the emperors, the money created by kings. And the activity that a bank is involved in and a central bank is involved in allows them to create a debt by basically earning interest on money. Okay, so in layman's terms, let's say that I come to you and you're a bank and I give you £10 to put into my deposit. Now, according to banking regulations, and by now those regulations are even more complex, but for the sake of this argument, let's keep them simple. Let's say that they need to keep 10% in reserve. So the moment that £10 gets deposited on my account, it's not lying there lazily, just chilling. Instead, what the bank can do is it can lend £9 of that back into someone else who came to the bank to get a loan. And the bank will do it with interest, okay? So the interest rate is the rate that the bank in that situation will earn on this transaction. But remember, there was no actual productive activity taking place. And suddenly, out of the £10, you find that, let's say the interest is 10%, there is already £11 in circulation, okay? Because the person will take out £9 loan and put £1 back as the interest. And remember that £1 is still back in the bank at the time. So as you can see, naturally it inflates the money supply. Even without anyone clicking the so-called printer to go burr, as people like to describe it, in our digital era, it's simply by bookkeeping that one can create money out of thin air, okay? And of course, it takes away the value of the money that everyone holds by adding more, by diluting it more, by adding more of these pieces into the pool. Now, the thing is, though, whoever is taking on debt will then have to pay it back, okay? And the trap of interest rate that one might encounter is that if you cannot pay back money on time, over time, if you've been in that situation before, you certainly know, and if you haven't, good for you. Over time, you will find that you will be paying back more and more the longer the period of the money that is yet to be paid back is accruing interest, the higher that interest will go. It's a compounding effect. Remember, it can work to your advantage or disadvantage. We've talked about that in Let's Talk About Money episode and Why You Shouldn't Buy Bitcoin episode. It's the basics of interest. Interest can work for you. For example, if you invest in something and there is an interest rate of 10% per year, every next year that investment stays there, you're accruing more and more compounding. You're compounding the effect of your investment. In the same way, it goes the other way around. If you take on debt, the longer you make the effort to pay it back, the greater it becomes. And for example, if you don't have a mortgage just yet, if you decide to take a mortgage in the future, maybe you already did, you will know, or you should know, that when you take on a mortgage, for example, for £200,000, what you will pay back over time will be more than that, because there is interest included, right? You borrow money from the bank and the bank earns on that borrowed money, and you pay back, let's say, I don't know, £300,000, right? So if you had cash of £200,000 to your name at the time, you didn't have to take on the loan, and so you didn't have to pay that additional £100,000 for interest. Okay, so now imagine. So the author talks about the process, and the process of these economic hitmen goes like this. First of all, the economists, usually a group of professionals with some great opportunities, would arrive at a developing country, and they would prepare a proposal that shows just how beneficial it will be for that country to go into debt by investing in the infrastructure, in the different mega projects, and they will show all those statistical projections of what this investment will do for the country. And if you assume that a local king or a local, you know, whatever, president wants the best for their country, they might fall prey to it by looking at the plans and being like, wow, this is amazing, you know, the World Bank will be the one lending the money, you'll get the money from the World Bank to invest, and of course there are some steps and regulations that you're gonna have to go through, but for example, you know, it sounds like a great deal, right? Someone will give you money so you can develop, and what you do in exchange is you pay back a certain rate of interest over time, and potentially you allow some of the contractors from a certain sector to come and work in your country. And of course that, you know, it can be perceived as a way of fasting, like increasing the speed and efficiency of your development, of course, right? Because suddenly you have that additional resource to use. and you can use that money to hire contractors to get the materials, and you can, let's say, build roads, build some great structures for football fields, whatever it is, whatever the project might be. And this is the first step, right? So the first step is to get them in debt. The moment someone is indebted, the author says that you allow the project to start, you hire contractors that are actually collaborating. They are companies, big conglomerates, which are the ones being hired to perform the certain work, which is also what the author actually points out as a big travesty of the process, where actually local communities do not benefit from opportunities to work because the contractors would bring their own workers from abroad just for the contract to go forth. And then over time, the more they work through the project, the more is being done, the longest it takes, the longest that interest gets accrued. And at some point, when they feel that they've been, when the economic hitmen feel that they have milked all they could from the country by actually, you know, taking out all that money in the form of interest and getting all these projects and whipping up so much debt there, basically, you know, maybe prolonging some of the works. We all know that work does not necessarily go to plan, and especially in construction projects, it's very often that projects get delayed, and you know, you have to pay the workers and stuff like that. You encounter some troubles. Then at some point, those same economists who came to the president and told him all these amazing plans will come back and present to him just how much he will fall short because of his indebtedness right now, and because of the interest ballooning, and because of all these things that they didn't see coming, but they happened. And they will essentially put on the table this eerie sort of deal, right? They will kind of blackmail the leader by saying, well, now you're in such a debt that you either default on that debt, and to default on a debt means that someone will write off your debt, but in exchange for, you know, some sort of assets, let's say that you have to sell off a part of the land, or you have to get rid of some gold or whatever, you'll either default on the debt, or you can stay on, and we can pretend that that's not a problem, but now you're working for us, okay? And they start to make demands. And even worse so, the more demands they make and the more demands are being fulfilled by the leader, the more intertwined he is with them, and so it will be more difficult for him to get out. And then that blackmail can follow, right? Because if the leader would indebt his country so greatly and then go public to agree on it, he's risking his job or maybe his life even. And this is a great stick that they can use to basically instill that fear into the leader and take over the country, right? So not only did they suck out the resources and suck out the money to begin with, but now they actually own, like, enslaved that leader's, that country, right? And this is what the author describes as sort of extortion procedure, this indebtedness. And the important thing to note here is that what author mentions is that they operate on behalf of corporatocracy, which is basically a mixture of global elites, multinational corporations, and financial institutions working together. And it's the whole procedure and the way it's structured is designed to maintain this plausible deniability, right? It's not any one bank, it's not any one company, it's not any one country. there is always someone that is being a contractor of a contractor of a, you know, somehow unrelated, but not really. And the, of course, you cannot blame the economist because he was just talking. He didn't actually do anything. Of course, you cannot blame solely the construction worker because, you know, he was working by the plan. You cannot blame the bank because maybe, you know, they believed in your project and so forth. So everyone is covered. And the leader essentially took on the debt that it turns out it was never to be repaid anyway. And now he's in a bind. And the author also mentions the three-tier enforcement level, making this even more eerie, really, which the quote here is, if the economic hitman fails, the jackal steps in. If that fails, the military arrives. Jackals are essentially here, for the purpose of the book, mercenaries. Basically, you know, men, and not only probably that that are sent to a certain country, maybe to perform a coup, maybe to take out that leader when the leader rebels against this, you know, enslavement that he's, you know, maybe he doesn't want to accept the blackmail, so they will have to take someone out. So the, you know, the debt is that primary weapon, as I said. It's basically World Bank loans plus Wall Street investments, which create permanent leverage. And then the countries are tied up financially and slowly drained. And once they feel like they are about to default, it's not actually the failure of the project. That's the goal of the system. And of course, I mentioned that they are using statistics as a tool of deception. And if you've not yet realized that statistics can be manipulated, and not in a sense that they will change the data points, but in a sense that they will change the way the data is presented, so it actually shows a different outcome, then I would encourage you, with all due respect, to wake up and to look it up yourself, because that applies to many other things, not only economic hitmen. And a few quotes here that I wanted to share with you in terms of that core idea here of indebtedness through debt, enslavement through debt, fear, and so-called help, investment, is, we're well paid to cheat countries out of billions of dollars. If the economic hitman was completely successful, the debtor would default and become indebted forever. Statistics can be manipulated to fit the needs of the statistician. Humor is the reason they use the term economic hitman. Who would believe it? Now, the second theme explored in the book, and actually the author mentioned that the book for him became like a insurance policy, and he decided to publish it because that way he is sort of covered that if anything happens to him, it's obvious who did it. So it's basically this idea of good intentions and complicity, and basically how ordinary people become instruments of harm. Because he started, like I think hopefully majority of people starts, believing that for a good cause he's going to make the world a better place. And he applied to a bunch of jobs as an economist, and he got this position at a consultancy firm. And soon enough, he started working for the World Bank as the economist. And the thing is here, economic hitmen start mostly as people who believe that they're doing good until the system sort of closures on them. And then they realize that they are not doing exactly the right thing. And the question is, what will you do about it, especially if you're already tied so deeply into? And of course, yet again, plausible deniability. We are, I mean, each and every one of us, I think, can be guilty of that same problem where we manage with our amazing wisdom and, smartness to cheat ourselves out of thinking that we're the one to blame, right? Maybe we use the excuse that we were just following orders, as many Nazi soldiers did, or as many any soldiers out there who committed atrocities often say. Or maybe we just didn't know, or we didn't understand. And of course, you know, this is not a moral treaty. We're just exploring what the author wants us to consider. But his point on this part of the book, in this part of the book, is that majority of them started out as idealists and believing that they're doing well. And then later on, it's just a question of, will you stay complicit? Will you participate? Will you be lulled in the comfort and, of course, extreme amounts of money? Because remember that this is not the kind of job that doesn't pay well. He said, once aware, it was already too late. He was a made man. Of course, as I said, the thing is, everyone believes that they are doing the right thing, right? If you ask even the most, what you might perceive as the greatest atrocity, the person who committed it, unless it's some extreme case of violent crime, even then, I think, oftentimes people will think that they did the right thing. From their perspective, it seemed like the right thing. And of course, the role of fear here is great, because the moment you realize you're a part of this sort of evil cabal, the author describes it in the book that you're facing this question of, what should I do about it, and how can I act to ensure that I don't get, you know, taken out, knowing that that's actually a part of the process. How do I get out? And it's not obvious that it's easy, but of course the author points out that silence is basically participation. Looking away is what enables the system. And this is exactly what I mentioned earlier. Looking away from these problems, looking away from these situations, looking away from these topics that we're exploring here, makes you complicit. And I hope that that this sort of episode can encourage you to read the book and dig deeper and explore and keep your eyes and ears open. The historical proof that the author point, you know, offers throughout the book, there are some some examples. Of course, the Iran from 1953, the whole revolt in Iran and economic colonization, replacing military rule. Panama, Ecuador, Indonesia, Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, and Iraq, all of these places, according to the author, were, the conflicts within them and coups were an outcome of this economic hitman activity. And foreign aid as a mechanism for enriching elites and bankrupting nations. And here, I think a hot topic of the last year was the USAID, right? USAID. That supposedly is this fund that has been used, and some parts of it might still be being used, I am not so sure, by non-governmental organizations, so NGOs sending out money from the United States to throughout the world. And yet again, this is this idea that if you think about the fact that the moment you are indebted with someone, the moment you're taking money from someone, in some way you're connected to them, don't be surprised if that connection then turns out for the worst for you. There is a reason why that is considered slavery, right? And of course, you can take a loan from a friend. Maybe, you know, you can get some financial help from someone and be okay with it spiritually and just get on with your life, pay back your debt and so forth. But especially when the debt is linked to an interest rate and when that interest rate can be prolonged to accumulate by some unforeseen, unexpected and uncontrolled by you forces, then you are risking signing kind of a deal with the devil, right? You might never be able to get out of that debt. And in the same way, if you are receiving free money from someone, you know, ask yourself, what is it? What is that money for? And even if on paper it's for one thing, look for the outcomes, right? Look for the result. I remember this quote, I don't remember by whom, but it really speaks to me, that the result of an activity is what it was purpose. What the purpose of it was, right? So if someone is telling you that what they're doing right now, let's say that they are eating a donut, and they're telling you that they're eating this donut because it will make them feel healthier, and that way they will lose some weight. It sounds great, they can be doing that, but if the outcome is that they just gotten more ill and more fat, then from this quotes idea, from this idea's perspective, the point of that system was what it does, and the point of that system was to get more fat, right? In the same way, if the outcome of a system again and again is debt and slavery and defaulting on that debt and basically ruining the country's economy, then maybe that was the whole point. And so if someone is giving you free money for something, it's worth asking yourself what that money is for. And if you don't know exactly what, maybe, you know, take a few moments, a few breaths before you decide to accept it. A few quotes about this topic here. By choosing to look away and not dig deeper, we enable the economic hitman. Everyone, even those who do evil, thinks that they're doing the right thing. Under the guise of saving countries from communism, that's one of the reasons, especially after Fraud and after the Cold War, that these operations have been done. Life is composed of coincidences. How we respond to them makes all the difference, right? And this is this invitation for us to explore what we want to do about it, what's going on, and how will we react. Now, finally, the theme number three is the death economy and life economy. Death economy versus life economy. And basically this invitation to break the cycle through your conscious choice. The core idea is that the whole of the system works because we allow it to. The alternative is not revolution by force, but a shift in values, incentives, and daily choices from death economy to life economy. So first point is that loans and, you know, all kinds of tax breaks, subsidies and VC funding, all of that participates in the propagation of this system, right? And the public money that is siphoned from healthcare and social systems into corporate profit is the outcome. The all kinds of subsidies, unfortunately, are likely to end up in the hands of those that are just really good at getting the money, not necessarily the ones that are providing the greatest service, especially that the public funding often is mismanaged because people in charge of it don't feel full accountability for that money, right? Because, you know, the paradox about the governmental spending is that if you were running a company, you would try to spend as little and as effectively as possible. If you are running a country and you have a budget for the year, you will make sure to spend all of that budget, because otherwise you will be liable to get less budget, smaller budget the next year. And this is the tragedy of all kinds of organizations which get money from subsidies. If every time I apply for some money to be offered to me for free, for a grant every year for my business, then I will always try to apply for the maximum amount. And of course, for that money to appear, taxes must be higher, and of course, yet again, the money has to be printed. The author invites as well us to consider the illusion of powerlessness the illusion of powerlessness. So, of course, the system basically relies on us behaving the way we do and not changing. And it relies on us consuming, investing, and not paying any attention to real levers of power. And, the important thing is to reframe that empire, that the old pillars of fear, debt, insufficiency, and division should be instead changed for courage, generosity, sustainable abundance, and compassion. Now, on that point, it's easier said than done, and I actually have a full list of actionable steps that the author points out. But as I said, it's easier said than done. 11 things we can all do, and at this point, I'll read those things for you, and then I'll just close up with a few ideas. Number one: keep telling the new story, death to life economy conversion. Number two: shop and invest consciously. Essentially, make your goods last longer. Don't go on shopping sprees every day. Shop locally. Live consciously. Focus on relationships and what matters. Pick a cause that appeals to your deepest passions and support it daily with your time, energy, and money. Become part of a living local community. Support local, as I said. Flood media outlets and corporations about the need to change. Basically, vote with your opinion, with your money, spend in the companies that you think are supporting a positive change rather than negative. Encourage creation of local, national, or international parks. Fight for campaign finance reform plan. Avoid debt and interest payments, so to not propagate this debt-based system. Because think about it, every time you take out a loan, every time you take on debt, you have created money out of thin air for that system to thrive. Make heroes and icons out of the people that are trying to change the world for the better. And support reform movements that most appeal to you. Of course, this relates to essentially finding out who out there is trying to change the world for the better the way you perceive it to needing a change, and voting for them, encouraging them, promoting them, and so forth. Now, saying all that, from my perspective, the first and foremost thing we all should do is to acknowledge these things. And I know that this episode will not be as popular as many other that are a bit more, on a popular topic. I know that even among my friends, even bringing up these ideas, these observations, really these facts, can seem sometimes by some as being a party pooper, kind of picking up a very heavy topic, discussing things that are disgusting and upsetting, and in many ways just it might just be more pleasant not to look at it, right? It might be more pleasant not to think about it, but I think that's exactly why we should. And as I said, the book itself explores the topic in an in-depth and a very, I think, eloquent manner. It's also quite pleasant to read. It's not one of those dry reads. I actually listened to it and I enjoyed it. I listened to it over two or three flights, so it's not the longest one as well. In terms of what we can do today, and this is my invitation for you for the next week, for the coming days and for the coming months, years, is ask yourself whenever you are, you know, maybe offered a certain loan, or maybe you do also have this issue of being called up every now and then with some amazing offer of a new credit card to use. Maybe when you're seeing the deals, when you're looking at a new car to buy, when you might be browsing some mortgage options for your next home and so forth. Every time you do that, remember this idea of the debt and its slavery and enslavement, and ask yourself, what can I do to make my debt as little as possible? What can I do to maybe not propagate this system, not to promote it further? And of course, it's easier said than done. Same with all those big corporations that are obviously playing a part. Shopping locally might not be cheaper than shopping from a big conglomerate, but yet again, it's that choice that we have to make. I have a friend who's really into shopping locally, and for her it's a no-brainer. She accepts the prices difference and she doesn't even think about it, because she also argues that it's a much better produce when it's bought from a local farmer rather than imported all across the globe and maybe produced in a mass producing facility rather than a local grass-fed farm or so forth. So these are some concepts for you to mull over. I don't want to discourage you from getting a mortgage or taking a credit card. I'm using one myself. It's not the whole point. That's not the point, right? The point is to think about it and to think about it in a slightly different way. And maybe, hopefully, because of it, and I'll also put the link below to Simon Dixon's podcast for all of you crazy people who have gotten this far and want to learn more and are willing to listen to the uncomfortable truth. Oh, that's the right one. For all of you out there who do want that, please explore Simon Dixon's work. He does every week a weekly sort of review of what's going on in the world. And the moment you start looking through the lens of what you know by now and what you will learn from the New Confessions of Economic Hitman and all the other books that I'll link below that I mentioned, you can start looking at what's going on in the world through a different lens and you'll start noticing more. The moment you understand that much more depends on the money flows is the moment you stop or at least you slow down your falling for all kinds of popular slogans and trends and fads and different manias that might happen. It's not easy to explore difficult topics. It's not easy to explore topics that make you feel uncomfortable. It's not easy to hear someone ramble for almost an hour about something that you might not even want to think about. It is very easy to turn on your telly and watch the news and get offended by someone's comment on Twitter and get really worried about what's going on the other side of the globe because someone on the news told you to do so. it's very easy to buy fast food. It's not so easy to work out and eat healthily. Of course, if you've gotten this far, you know that this podcast is not about making it easy. It's about making your life worthwhile, more pleasant, and more meaningful, right? I want to spread some good vibes, potentially a little bit of wisdom, and hopefully some curiosity and inspiration for you to explore these topics yourself. So I hope that I've done that today as well. So yeah, have a think about it all. Let me know as well. Feel free to send me an email. Thank you so much for all of you who are. Maybe comment below what you think about this. Share it with a friend, as I said, if you think this is worthwhile. And definitely read the book, The New Confessions of Economic Hitman. You won't regret it. It's a really great read. And yeah, other than that, have a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay happy, stay healthy, and I'll see you next time.